Okay, thank you. Thank you, Margie. So, Thierry, I think we have to start now.
Certainly. One moment.
I agree.
Thank you. One moment while we begin the recordings and the introduction. One moment, please. Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening. Welcome to the At Large Capacity Building Program 2016, our fourth webinar on the topic Competition, Consumer Trust, and Consumer Review, CCTRT, held on Wednesday, the 25th of May, 2016 at 2200 UTC. We will not be doing a roll call as it is a webinar, but if I could please remind everyone on the phone bridge as well as computer to mute your speakers and microphones as well as state your name when speaking, not only for transcription purposes, but to allow our interpreters to identify you on the other language channels. We have English, Spanish, and French interpretation. Thank you for joining. I'll now turn it back over to our moderator, T. Johnny Benjamin, Chair of the Capacity Building Working Group. Please begin.
Thank you very much, T.C. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, everyone. This is the fourth webinar in our 2016 program, Capacity Building Program. The topic today is an update on the Competition, Consumer Trust, and Consumer Choice Review Team. We will have today the luxury of having four speakers. We will have, first of all, our two representatives in this review team, Thierry Kahn and Carlton Samuel, and also we will have from the staff Margie Millian, and we will have also Jonathan Souk that I welcome here. First of all, I will give the floor to Thierry to have some housekeeping announcements, and then we will proceed to the presentation. So, Thierry, please.
Thank you, T. Johnny. Just a few housekeeping items we'd like to go over. If you do have a question for our presenters, in the box on the bottom left-hand side of your screen, if you could please type in your questions there, and we'll make sure our presenters receive the questions. If there is not enough time to answer your question, we will post the question and the answers on the wiki page. Also, in addition, we are having our captioning today. As you can see, our captioning pod is in the bottom middle of your screen. In addition, today we'll have three pop quiz questions as well as an evaluation. One at a time, the pop quiz question and evaluation will appear in the bottom right-hand corner for you. Thank you very much, and with this, I'll turn it over to Margie Milam.
Thank you, Terry, and good morning, good afternoon, and good evening to you all. As Tijani Ben mentioned, my name is Margie Milam, and I'm a vice president at ICANN in the department called the Multi-Stakeholder Strategy and Strategic Initiatives Department. And that department is responsible for lots of interesting projects at ICANN, but the one that takes most of my time relates to conducting reviews for ICANN. And reviews are a very important feature of ICANN and very important to ensuring that ICANN continues to evolve and to address the needs of the Internet community. And so as we look at reviews, and we'll focus in on a specific review later on in the presentation, we look at reviews from different perspectives. At ICANN, we really want to foster a culture of continuous improvement. And the reviews are designed, the whole process is designed to do that. When we have reviews at ICANN, we try to look at either a particular topic or a particular structure within ICANN to see how it can be improved. For example, we might look at a topic such as the security and stability and resiliency of the domain name system, and we would see whether we're applying industry best practices to that area of ICANN's performance. We also want to keep up with different business trends and ensure that we're doing things as efficiently as possible. And one of the things that these reviews also do is take a look at ICANN's commitments that you see in the bylaws and you see in the affirmation of commitment to ensure that future processes are meeting our commitments. And the other thing that reviews do are they actually take a look at these various subjects and structures within ICANN, and we want to make sure that we are fitting in within the vision and the strategic plan of ICANN. And we also want to make sure that ICANN stays on its mission and does not go outside of its scope and mandate. So that's some of the benefits of the reviews that are being conducted at ICANN. As I mentioned, you know, reviews are very important, and they're important because they improve accountability and transparency. And especially at this time when we're looking at the transition and the of the IANA stewardship function, it's an important time for ICANN to be able to show the world that we are evolving and we are keeping pace with the way that the Internet community is changing and the world is changing. And in particular, reviews are a way that we bring in the community input to ensure that that we are fulfilling our commitments and that we're staying true to our mandate. And so one of the features that you'll see as we talk about these reviews is that we really strive to get a geographic and global coverage, both in terms of nationalities represented. We try to look for gender balance. We also want to make sure that we are bringing in a lot of diversity of viewpoints as well as we look at the different topics that are being reviewed. And so that's a very important aspect of the review cycle. And in particular, from the staff perspective, it is always our goal to ensure that we're bringing in a new perspective and bringing in participants that can share their expertise to help improve ICANN. And so as we talk about the types of reviews, there are two types of reviews that are done at ICANN. One is done under the Affirmation of Commitments, or the AOC as it's called. That is the document that ICANN has signed with the U.S. government that outlines the relationship between the U.S. government and ICANN. And under the Affirmation of Commitments, we've committed to looking at different aspects of ICANN's work. So we have, for example, a commitment that every 3 years we're going to take a look at the accountability and transparency of ICANN and have a review team that focuses specifically on that, and that's called the ATRT. We also, as we will go into in more detail on this call, we're looking into the aspects of competition, consumer choice, and trust as it relates to the launch of the new GTLD program. And so that review team is looking into how the new GTLD program and the new extensions contributed to the areas of competition and consumer choice and trust. Another area is taking a look at the security and stability and resiliency of the Internet. And so we will have a review that will be kicked off later this year that's going to take a look at how ICANN handles a security, stability, and resiliency issues. And then the last type of review under the Affirmation of Commitments is the Who Is related one. And so that takes a look at the Who Is policy and how it's implemented and whether it meets the needs of law enforcement and the broader Internet community. And so those are the reviews under the Affirmation of Commitments. Those are conducted by community members. And what we typically do with reviews, and this is all specified under the Affirmation of Commitments, is that there will be and there are a group of individuals that are designated to represent the different supporting organizations and advisory committees of ICANN. And so a review team is a closed group. It's a specified number of people that represent different perspectives related to the topic that's being reviewed. And the Affirmation of Commitments also ensures that that there's the opportunity for independent experts to participate in the review under the affirmation of commitment as well. So when you're looking at a topic like consumer choice and trust, you would see experts that have expertise, individuals that have expertise in the areas of competition, for example, or economics, or consumer protection. And so that way, those perspectives are reflected in the recommendations that come out of the review team. And the other types of reviews that we do are the organizational reviews, and those look at the ICANN structures themselves to see whether they're properly being managed and operated. And as many of you may recall, we are in the process of concluding the review on the GNSO, and we're kicking off the review of ALAC and the at-large organization. And that type of review is a little bit different than the AOC review because it's actually conducted by independent experts, independent reviewers, that is, that are under contract with ICANN to take a look at how that structure works. And so the organization reviews look at the different structures such as the GNSO, the CCNSO, NONCOM, ALAC, RSAC, and SAC. And those are mandated by the bylaws and involve a group of staff and these independent reviewers taking a look at the organizations and how they can be more effective. And so what comes out of reviews, when you look at these reviews, what comes out is a very important series of recommendations, but they don't come to the board until they've gone through a vetting process with the community. So what these review teams will do, these community-led review teams, is they will come up with recommendations for how to improve the particular area. So if you're looking at, for example, the Who Is reviews, you would be making recommendations. You'd see recommendations that relate to how to improve the Who Is policy, and there would be public comment opportunities where people who are not members of the review team can come in and share their perspective on whether the recommendations make sense. And then those recommendations get fed to the board, and the board of directors then takes a look at it and decides what to do with those recommendations. The board of directors might have some of those recommendations be fed into the long-term planning process for ICANN, and you will see, for example, in our strategic plan, our five-year strategic plan, that there's a lot of projects and goals and portfolios that relate to recommendations that came out of the review team. The board also accepts the recommendations. Sometimes there might be changes to the recommendations, and the board can also reject some of the recommendations if it feels that the recommendations weren't appropriate. From the organizational review side, the independent reviewer would make recommendations, and again, those would be vetted through a public comment process. And some of you may have seen that with respect to the GNSO recommendations, where there was a community feedback on how those recommendations were perceived and whether they were appropriate to be accepted for further implementation. And so as part of the work that comes out of the independent reviewer, these recommendations go to the board, and then the board goes through the same process of determining whether some of the recommendations should be adopted or all, or whether there should be changes to the recommendations, and some of the recommendations may, in fact, be rejected. And in the case, for example, of the GNSO, there was a working party that took a look at the recommendations and felt that some of the recommendations that came from the independent reviewer weren't ones that made sense. So the working party from the GNSO made recommendations that not all of the ones that came from the independent examiner should be adopted. And so that's the process that you will see as many of you may be involved in dealing with the issues that come out of the review of ALAC and the at-large organization. And then from the perspective of the board and staff, we really, as we work through both of these types of reviews, we're looking for recommendations from the review teams that are clear and can be prioritized and are measurable and actionable. One of the things that we've learned from the early reviews that were taken right after the affirmation of commitments was signed is that sometimes recommendations might be vaguely written, and the intent of the recommendations may not be always clear. And so as we guide the review teams going forward, we're looking for the review team to really take a look at the recommendations and prioritize them to show how important they are, and also to how they can be measured. What is considered success for a recommendation? That is something that is an important part of the review team process. And then we always want to be mindful of the resources, because as it may happen, some recommendations may take a lot of resources and time and planning in order to implement, and others may not need so much financial backing. And so that's part of the process that we're looking for when we're supporting a review team. And now with respect to the role of the community plays a tremendously important role in the review cycle. Even though the review team itself is a confined group of individuals that are selected to be on the review, there's opportunities in the review process for the community to participate. So, for example, at the very beginning of a cycle, there would be a call for volunteers where community members submit their names of individuals to participate in the review team. At that point, there's an endorsement process where the supporting organizations or the advisory committees can endorse candidates, and that's a very important part of the process. And then as the review team continues its work, there's a plan for action that is presented. The community participates in consultations that take place during the ICANN meeting. When the documents and recommendations become a draft report, there's an opportunity for input, and then there's always opportunities at the end when the final report is delivered to present your opinion as to whether those recommendations make sense. And this is an important slide that I wanted to share with you so you can plan your work as over the next year or so. It's a very busy time right now for my department, and in particular for the review process. As you look at the slide today, we are concluding the GNSO review. We've kicked off the Consumer Choice and Trust review, and we're moving into the at-large review. All of that is essentially occurring right now. Well, next month we will do the call for volunteers for the next review team, which is the second review team on security, stability, and resiliency of the domain name system. And that will kick off a series of work related to that topic. And then later in the year, in October, we will do another call for volunteers for the second Who Is review team. And that will look at the Who Is policy, as I mentioned before, to be followed up in year 2017 for the third review team that takes a look at accountability and transparency, the ATRT. So just so that you can keep that in mind, as this work progresses, we will be looking for ALAC and the at-large community to come up with names of individuals that might want to volunteer for those activities. And with that, I'll pause. Terry, do we want to do the pop quiz now or wait till the end?
Hi, thank you, Margie. Let's go ahead and conduct our first pop quiz. You'll now see the pop quiz question appears in your bottom in your right-hand side of your screen. And the question is, what is the CCTRT review? Please select your answer now. Once again, you should be seeing the pop quiz question on your right-hand side of your screen. And we'll give everybody just a few seconds longer to read the answers. And Margie, if you could go ahead and please share the answer at this time.
It's hard for me to read it. The answer is, it's the review team on competition, consumer choice, and trust.
Thank you.
Thank you.
So now
and
we turn
to
our...
Yes, we will turn to Jonathan Zuck, who will give you some details on the consumer choice trust review.
Hi, everyone, and thanks for having me. I personally voted for the cross-community team review on the last poll there because I just felt like that was such a creative answer. But the CCP review is indeed a review of the new GTLD program in particular through the lens of how it enhanced competition in the DNS space as well as choices for consumers and overall consumer trust. Am I able to advance the slides, or does somebody else do that?
Hi, Jonathan. You should have the ability to do so on the arrow.
Oh, that's fancy. Okay. So the CCPRD mandate was to evaluate how the GTLD program has promoted competition, consumer trust, and consumer choice, to look at the effectiveness of the application evaluation process and the effectiveness of the safeguards that were put in place to prevent some of the downside consequences of the rapid expansion of the new GTLDs. So you can see the language from the affirmation commitments at the bottom. But the idea is that this review, the first one of these reviews, should happen a year out from when the new program began. Of course, there's a lot of question about you know, what that should mean, because in many ways the program is still undergoing because there's strings that have not yet been delegated, et cetera. And so in some ways it's early to make this assessment, but this is a review that will continue to happen over time, and so we'll do our best now, and it'll get reviewed again in the future. The CCP review team members, as Margie described, were selected in large part by the community, and there's 6 in North America, 3 in Latin America, 3 in Africa, 3 in Europe, 2 in the Asia Pacific, and there's 7 overall, which also includes some independent experts, including an economist, Stan Besson, who's going to be great help to us in doing some of the rigorous math associated with determining increases in competition and choice. And then the ICANN CEO and chair of the GAC designated representatives to the team. And so Fadi, I think in some form of punishment, designated Jamie Headland to be a part of our team, and the GAC designated Lorraine Capon from the FTC, who has consequently begun to chair the sub-team on consumer trust and safeguards. So you can see sort of where people came from here. Drew Stanley, Ravi Shankar, and Fabro Stivell are the independent experts that we have on board. And the two representatives of ALAC are Kali Khan and Carlton Samuels, who will also be talking to you. So this is a little bit of a dense slide, but you'll be able to read this at your leisure. One of the first things we had to do was define what we meant by consumer, and that ended up being fairly broadly defined. And then the notion of trust, competition, and consumer choice. So, you know, choice was sort of demand side and competition was supply side, if that makes sense. And then one of the most intriguing exercises is to find the relevant market. You know, the one possibility is to look at just the new GTLD market. One is to look at the overall GTLD market. Another aspect of the market is the role that ccTLDs play as competition for gTLDs, whether they're marketed that way, like .tv or .ly, or if they just happen to be competition because they're used in different regions. There's actually been a suggestion by ALAC that we ought to be looking at the broader internet identity market, so that what is the extent to which social media, like Facebook and elsewhere, are competition for new gTLDs? What is the extent to which third-level domains, such as the ones on Squarespace or Wix, represent competition? And so there's the net result is that we're going to probably be looking at a number of different markets and trying to determine the competition levels in each of them and the effect that the new gTLD program has had on them. So one of the things that's interesting about this review team that makes it somewhat distinct from the others is that the work actually began about 5 years ago with a board resolution requesting that the GNSO and ALAC come up with recommendations for data that should begun to be collected. And Cheryl Langdon-Orr participated on that effort along with me to come up with a set of metrics that we might begin to measure and collect, so that by the time that the review team actually began its work, there would in fact be some historical data to make use of. And so between the GNSO and the ALAC, we came up with about 67 different metrics and data sources that staff have been busily collecting over time. And so you can see on the on our wiki page, which is ccp.wiki, you know, the documents associated with our team, but you can see the metrics that were created and then where to find the ones that have already been published by staff. As far as our own MO for the team, we're trying to be very transparent. We're trying to introduce a new concept of fact-based evaluation, as Margie raised at the beginning, and try to make objective measures of these issues of competition, trust, and choice. And so wherever we can make a quantitative analysis, we're doing that, as opposed to sort of an anecdotal analysis, which is so often the case. So there's data collection, there's surveys done by Nielsen, there's economic report being done by analysis group, all things that are being inputs into this process. And so we're very focused on trying to make our findings measurable so that the success of our recommendations can likewise be measurable. And so those are the primary objectives of the review team. And I'm happy to take any overall questions. Otherwise, I'll hand it over to Carlton to talk about some of the substantive questions that we've decided to address.
Okay, so this is Carlton for the record. Thank you, Jonathan. These next ones were going to be voiced by Kylie, but unfortunately, he is can't be reached at the minute. So we are divided into some teams that are looking at specific parts of the mandate. And we have a team that is dedicated, a sub-team dedicated to looking at competition and consumer choice. And we're diving down into some deep dive, as they say, into certain aspects of it. Both Jonathan and Margie emphasized that the review team is really very committed to evidence-based deliberations and recommendations. So we are looking for data, we are engaging persons in the field that can provide us with data and analysis of data he mentioned Nielsen doing surveys and the analysis group doing some analyses of what's happening. Price competition, we're looking to aspects of price competition. The idea is that we know there's a wholesale price associated with domain names, and there are also retail prices. We're trying to see what we can find relative to competition using price in the market and how that has affected competition overall. We know that there are non-price aspects of competition, service elements and so on, and at various levels through the reseller chain, we're looking up those things. Jonathan mentioned the intriguing look at market conditions. And we are...
Pardon me, Carlton, this is Terry from staff. I do apologize for the interruption, but it seems our interpreters have lost their audio. Do you mind if we could just pause for one moment and we can see if we can get them reconnected?
That I will, Terry. Not to worry.
Thank you so much for your patience. It'll be just a moment longer. Once again, thank you everyone for your patience. Just a moment longer. And once again, thank you everyone for your patience. We are still trying to get our interpreters back online. It does appear we have one back. We're just waiting for confirmation on the other one. One moment longer, please. And once again, thank you everyone for your patience. It'll be just a moment longer. And I have confirmation. Our interpreters are back. Carlton, thank you again, and pardon the interruption. Please begin.
Thank you, Terry. This is Carlton again for the record. So we're back to competition and consumer choice. And we're looking at market structures. We are looking at the elements in the market. We are looking at the market channels. So we are interested in things like, is there market segmentation? How do we define the market? How do we define segments? How are they delimited? And so on. We are looking at issues surrounding the number of choices. Does the more actually mean choice, or does it develop confusion? We are looking at the impact in regions and the choices by language available with new IDNs and so on coming in. So these are some of the substantive questions the competition and consumer choice sub-team is doing deep dive on. As we go along, we intend to involve more of the community in all of this. You will see from the team requests to communities, members, specific communities, registrars, resellers, registries, for help with data, and so on. This is an ongoing process. We will be coming to you time and again for assistance in gathering information getting data that we can examine to ensure that we arrive at evidence-based conclusions. The Safeguards and Trust sub-team is looking at the issues specific to safeguards. You probably know that this has been, there are several levels of safeguards. Most of you will be familiar with the Category 1 categories, two GAC safeguards. If you don't remember what they all are, I believe they are outlined in the Beijing communique from the GAC. And essentially, what the GAC safeguard says is that there are some strings that are linked to regulated or professional sectors that they think should operate in a way that is consistent with applicable laws. That's a direct quote. And for those strings that they identify, and they notice that they have not identified them exhaustively, they would want to see specific safeguards applied, and they have a broad category related to consumer protection, sensitive strings, regulated markets. And there's a whole long list. You can go look at that Beijing communique, Annex 1, and it will tell you what all those are. Similarly, Category 2 safeguards, they were related to strings, what they call generic terms, and they said exclusive registry access should serve a public interest goal. And again, they have a long definition of what they mean by a generic string and so on. And then there's the public interest commitment. And members of the ELAC will know that the ELAC has been very interested in this. This has been a major project in ELAC. And our interest, of course, is public interest commitment should safeguard the global public interest and end user interest, and that they should be substantive and they should be enforced. And with respect to the ELAC position, is that the ICANN has a duty of care to ensure that public interest commitments by new GTLD registries are in compliance. Then, of course, there's all sorts of other ones that are strictly related to contractual obligations in registry agreements. Those would inure to safeguards. So then, with respect to trust, there are those things that are related to behavior and consumer and user behavior. What happens, how do they engender trust in the DNS as a whole? We are interested in looking at those in detail. We are looking at the impact of the GTLDs in developing economies. Most of you will know that the ELAC had a heightened interest in this topic and was very instrumental in development of the African Support Working Group, and out of that came the African Support Program. That has been an ongoing issue with the ELAC, and we are looking at what happened there. We are reviewing how this has impacted the new GTLD. And then there's a whole set of procedural issues. You would be mindful that we had an applicant guidebook, AGB, and that has all the procedures that are set out. There is certainly a lot of opinions to go around, but certainly some of us believe that the applicant guidebook procedurally was deficient. And so the question is, what are the gaps and how do we mitigate them in the subsequent round? So these are the issues that the Safeguards and Trust sub-team is interested in doing deep dive on. We also have a sub-team that is looking specifically at application and evaluation process. And in here, we are looking to see whether or not the application and evaluation process did not impact the participation of entities from underserved areas and markets, and how those processes might be tweaked to remove those disabilities. And of course, there's also the issue of equal opportunity for participation in the program at large, and whether or not the application and evaluation process discriminated to that extent. We have other issues, the delegation of TLDs that would be confusing or harmful. The GAC public policy advice, especially the Category 1 and Category 2 safeguards, and the implementation framework for those. And the last one might be of heightened interest, again, to the at large, and the issue is the community, how we definition of community TLDs, and how do we serve specific communities, and what do we put in place to ensure that that is better understood and maybe with better outcomes for communities. I'll hand this over now to Margie, and Margie will take the next slide. Of course, if there are questions, please hold them till the Q&A session when we will come back to you. Margie.
Thank you, Carlton. Actually, we will do a pop quiz question right now, and we will ask the second question, which is what
Thank
is
you,
the
Marge.
Oh, go ahead, Carrie.
Oh, no, go ahead, please.
The question is, what is the CCTRT reviewing?
And that was our previous question. Let me quickly bring up the other one. I apologize, and there you go.
I thought that sounded familiar.
And so our current pop quiz question.
Go
yep.
Go ahead, Carrie.
Thank you. Who is conducting the review? Please complete your answer now. Once again, the pop quiz question is, who is conducting the review? And Margie, if you could please share the answer with us.
The answer is the first one, which has 77%. You all listened well. It is a group of appointed community members and independent experts. So that is the correct answer for that question. Thank you, Terry.
Thank you.
And before I hand it off to Jonathan to go through the next slide, Jonathan, is there anything you want to add about the subjects that Carlton was talking about in the prior slide?
I guess not necessarily. Maybe we'll leave it for the question and answer period. I can't think of anything specific to bring up.
Great. So why don't you go ahead and walk through the next slides then?
Okay, sure. So one of the other things that you can find at the CCTE Wiki are the draft work plans for the various sub-teams and the overall work plan for the review team itself. We are trying to get some findings done by the end of the year because we are working in conjunction with the TDP on subsequent procedures, which is trying to look at what future applications for new GTLDs may or may not look like. And so we want to make sure and be an input into that PDP with our findings and recommendations. So we have determined issue areas thus far, and the next part of this has been requesting additional data. So as I mentioned at the top, we've been doing some data collection over the past few years, But as once the review team convened, we had to look at where there might be need for additional data. One of the areas that Carlton talked about was participation in the program from the developing world. And that is a tricky issue to study because it involves kind of interviewing the people who didn't apply, which isn't a list that we have in front of us, but trying to get an understanding of why more potential applicants from the developing world didn't apply for new GTLD strings is something that we're very interested in trying to figure out as part of our findings. And so we may engage some outside research on that, for example. As I mentioned, there are surveys and an economic study that were launched a year ago to create a kind of a baseline look at what prices look like in the case of the economic study and how consumers were feeling about the new GTLDs, with the Nielsen study. And so now a year later, both of those studies are being repeated, essentially, so we can see if there's been a change over the course of the past year and whether or not consumer feelings about the new GTLDs have changed, good or bad, in terms of their trust of the system, if their behavior has changed, and also whether or not pricing or pricing strategies or non-price competition has changed over the past year that the new GTLDs have really begun to enter the market. So in May and June, we'll see the results of the consumer survey and the economic survey published. We're hoping then in the fall to issue some interim findings and then for community feedback, et cetera. And then in December, look toward a draft report for public comment and to get people's feedback on both the findings and the recommendations. To incorporate that feedback and then hope to deliver a final report and recommendations to the ICANN board next April. So obviously we're interested in having you follow along with what we're doing and to provide input in particular via your representatives who are Kali and Carlton. They stand ready to take feedback from you and bring it to the review team. You can see our activities on our wiki at cct.wiki. You can see our email archives. You can listen to our calls and meetings. They're all public. You can always listen in. You can't speak, but you can listen in and then speak to Carlton or Kali to raise the issues that are important to you. If you'd like to send an email to us directly, you can reach us at input@cctrt.icann.org. So by all means, if you have some thoughts or feelings, things that we should be looking at that we may not already be thinking of, then please do reach out either directly or via Carlton and Kali so that we can make sure to do the best possible review. And this is us at our first face-to-face in Los Angeles. We're about to have our second face-to-face. Well, I guess our third face-to-face. We had one in Marrakesh as well. About to have our third face-to-face in Washington, D.C. on the 6th and 7th of June. So I look forward to seeing everybody back.
Hi, Jonathan.
So,
just before we go?
Yeah, go ahead.
I would like to mention that we have a liaison from the GNSO straight into the GNSO, and the person of Carlos Raul Guterres. Carlos is from Costa Rica, but he is our liaison to the GNSO as well as the RDS working group, just to mention that.
Well, thanks, Carlton. What Carlton means is the PDP to which I referred on subsequent procedures. So that's the group that's looking at what the shape of the new GTLD program might be going forward. And Carlos is serving on that working group as well as the review team. So he's our agent on the inside.
Thank you very much, Jonathan, Carlton, and Margie. Thank you for this presentation, very interesting, and I hope that everyone present here try to understand and try to... I hope that everyone has questions to ask you about this work, wonderful work. I will try first to ask you a simple question. Does your recommendation go to the applicant guidebook to change it for the upcoming rounds, or it is only a general recommendation, not precise recommendation, because everything you said here concerns very much the applicant guidebook.
Thank you, Tijani. That's a very good question. And I believe that the best way to think about it is that the PDP working group on subsequent procedures will be the ones that actually make direct modifications, if any, to a future guidebook. So we'll be making recommendations to the board that are larger in scope to deal with some of the issues associated with the developing world or potentially increasing competition and choice where perhaps it did not take hold. But the actual specific changes to the guidebook will come through that PDP working group.
Thank you very much, Jonathan. I have already one hand raised. First of all, I will ask Thierry if we have still other PopQuiz questions.
Hi, Tijani. We do have one final PopQuiz question. One moment, please, while I bring it up on screen.
Please.
And our final pop quiz question will be, what will the review team be producing? Please select your answer now. Once again, the question is, what will the review team be producing? And Margie and team, if you could please provide us with the correct answer.
Sure, Terry. You are all correct. The answer is the one that is about 100%, which is the recommendations, measurable and implementable recommendations for ICANN board consideration. Thank you. Now, Carlton had a question he wanted to pose to the ALAC folks on the call. Carlton, would you like to read your question?
This is Carlton, yes. Concerning safeguards, are there any that we can point to as significantly successful to the intent for which it was originally devised? And this is to my colleagues in at large.
Carlton, can you please repeat your question?
We have a set of safeguards, the public interest commitments, the category ones and twos of GATT, and the contractual ones. And I wanted to hear from you all whether or not you think any of them, anyone has been successful in terms of what the intent was.
If you want me to answer, I may say perhaps it's not fully successful, but the PIX, I think, was... and I have two hands raised, so I will give the floor to Olivier first.
Yeah, thanks very much, Tijani. It's Olivier. I can answer this, and then I can ask my question as well, because I have a question afterwards. So I give the hand, I pass on to Alan before taking the floor. Thank you.
Alan.
Thank you. I don't think the question is answerable. at this point for a number of reasons. First of all the safeguards the GAC requested were not implemented. The board, in its wisdom, reduced some of them significantly. Some applicants voluntarily did that kind of thing. So how you can tell whether someone who did something voluntarily is successful, because you don't know what the alternative would be if they hadn't done it. Moreover, last time I looked at this, and it's a few months ago at this point, when you look at some of the potential problems you can have with TLDs, the number of registrations was too low for them to really show up on any scale. So if in a larger TLD, you may see, and I'm making up the numbers, but you may see one out of 10,000 registrations cause some sort of potential problem. If a TLD only has 22,000 registrations, the statistics will not show up, those kind of things. So I think the numbers are, certainly when I last looked at them, are too early to make that kind of judgment. And in many cases, if safeguards were implemented, there is no real way to predict what would have been different if they hadn't. You're being asked to prove a negative at that point. So it's a really difficult problem, and I'm not quite sure how you address them. But the real issue is, in my mind, how do we make sure that we err on the side of prudence and safety and not put consumers at risk? Thank you.
Thank you, Alan. Olivier?
Thanks very much, Tijani. It's Olivier Capin-Leblanc speaking. And first, to answer the question that Carlton Samuels has asked, on the, and this is just purely my point of view that I'm going to share here. And I'm hearing a nasty echo at the moment, but I'll continue speaking. On the subject of PICs, public interest commitments, I once heard someone say that they weren't worth more than a bucket of spit. And I was quite shocked at the time when hearing this. I can't remember who it was that said it. It might have been someone on this call. In any case, all I can say is that so far that person appears to have been quite correct on this. They are voluntary, as Alan has said, and one of the weird things about them is that some of the organizations that did implement them and that did come up with a number of safeguards for their top-level domain appear to have somehow overdone it. And one discussion that I had yesterday with some people in Bern during the Swiss Internet Governance Forum was that one of the new GTLDs for a highly regulated string or that was on this list implemented safeguards which are so tight that none of the organizations that should be able to register domains under that TLD have been able to do it successfully so far. So they've been very much too strong on this. And it reminded me very much like the work of the Joint Applicant Support Working Group that had made the tightening of the regulations or the things that were required in order to qualify for applicant support so tight that no one ever qualified or just very few people managed to qualify for it. When it comes down to Category 1 top-level domains, or the ones in the Category 1 list that the GAC had supplied, as Alan said, there doesn't appear to have been any interest in the board to push forward with something like this. It's very disappointing, and I don't think there's even any interest from anyone in the whole process from proceeding forward with pushing in one way or other about these. So I'm particularly concerned about that. We were delayed, or the process to try and find a solution was delayed again and again. We had to run around the block a few times, and at the end of the day, nothing came out of it. And it seems to be a pattern at ICANN, unfortunately. So that's the end of this process as well, at least as I see it, although there was a lot of goodwill from at large to try and move things forward. When contracted parties say that they're not interested, it seems that this is the last word, the only word they need to say for a process to stop. But I do have a question, but I've seen that Alan has put his hand up, so I'll give the floor, I guess, back, and then I'll ask my question afterwards when we finish discussing this. Thank you.
Thank you. I also have a separate question, and I'll defer that one to answer it. I'm going to be a little bit more generous than my colleague in terms of the GAC advice and the board reaction to it. The board implemented most of the requirements that the GAC specified, with the exception of prior verification and validation of the credentials before granting a domain name in the list of TLDs they specified. The ALAC did a pretty extensive review of those TLDs, and our conclusions were, among other things, the GAC was somewhat overreaching in its list, and that is, there were indeed a number of those TLDs where the verification validation before granting the domain name was certainly valid. And some TLDs, in fact, have done that voluntarily. A fair number have done it voluntarily in one way or another. But the list was too extensive. So if it was a do it for the whole list or not at all, the board may well have taken the right decision. But sadly, there should have been a middle ground. And I'm still optimistic that between the review team and the PDP, both of whom were requested by the board to consider that issue, there will be some look at the granularity and what might be required for a subset of those kind of TLDs that the GAC identified. Thank you. Are we still here?
Sorry, I was speaking to myself. I was muted. Thank you very much, Olivier, Alan, and Olivier, back to you. Olivier?
I was, unfortunately, imitating you by also speaking to myself. So let's start again. It's Olivier speaking. And I was going to follow up on the answer that Jonathan had provided on the process by which the subsequent procedures PDP is going to take in the input from the CCT. I understand that the CCT is going to send this, it's going to go to the board, and then from the board it will go to the PDP. But by that time, we won't be operating under the AOSC anymore by the end of the work of the CCT, and we'll be operating under a community powers system. Does that mean that the community powers could overrule any of the input from the CCT?
Olivier, I think the nature of the community powers is that they can overrule the findings of any review team. But remember that part of the accountability reform is, in fact, to bake the review commitments from the affirmation of commitments into the bylaws. So it's not as though there would be something automatic that happens that makes the review irrelevant or something like that, because there'll be an ongoing requirement to review the new GTLD program for competition, choice, and trust. So if the actual community empowerment mechanisms are put in place to override board approval or disapproval, I guess, of our recommendations, then that would be the community operating, you know, within its purview. Does that make sense?
Yeah, thanks, Jonathan. It's Olivier speaking. It does make sense. Then I can just say I do have concerns about this because of the unwillingness of this part of the AOC of being transported into the new bylaws. I understand that, and I might be wrong now because things might have moved on, but I understand that this review was only going to happen for this current round of new GTLDs, and I'm not sure if it's baked into the new bylaws for the future rounds.
It is at this time baked into review for future rounds. There is, in fact, a community mechanism to change that fact. But again, those are fairly high bars. In other words, the community has the ability to add and remove reviews if they want to, but that's a very high bar and difficult to do. So I think for the foreseeable future, we'll see an ongoing CCT review. But at the very least, there's no reason that the recommendations of this team will be disrupted by the new community mechanisms.
Okay, thanks, Jonathan.
Thank you, Jonathan and Olivier. Alan, please.
Thank you very much. On that last point, I think, but I don't remember the exact wording, that this review would not be triggered by a new round, should there be a new round, but is at this point subject to the five-year rule, I think. I'm not 100% sure. In any case, I have a more general question, and you may not be far enough along to answer the question. The concept of competition in TLDs has always intrigued me. And this goes back to when I first started with ICANN, and the expression that was used is, let 1,000 flowers bloom. We need more and more of these TLDs. TLDs, in my mind, do not, in general, compete with each other. For right now, we have several, I guess, close to 2,000 TLDs floating around something. And if you look at the subset that competes in any given instance, it is a small number. So up until recently, .com might compete with the ccTLD in the region that the domain was being registered. I run a genealogy society, and we have a .ca, we have a .org. These days, we might go get a .club if we thought there was some reason. But we're not likely to get a .auto, .hotel, or .puppy. So in any given instance, depending on what the market is, a very small number of TLDs may compete with each other, and they may be successful or not. So I'm not quite sure what the whole concept of is competition in the whole top-level domain marketplace means. Can anyone enlighten me, or is that what you're spending your time talking about?
Well, thanks for the question, Alan, and feel free to break in, Carlton, if you like as well. That is what we're spending our time talking about in the competition and choice team. And as I mentioned at the top, I think addressing the very problem that you raise is one of the challenges, and that's why we're likely to perform an analysis on a number of different market definitions. So right now we're looking at trying to divide the new GTLDs up into a number of different types of markets, whether it's there's thematic things, so that, you know, there's four or five TLDs that are could be used for education, for example, or photography. There's also linguistic groupings that could be created. There's geographic groupings that can be created. And I think there, as you say, the number that will compete against each other won't be the total, but that in fact will there be competition in these various markets. And I think it's reasonable to ask whether or not the new GTLDs are in total somehow creating competition for the more generic legacy TLDs, you know, such as .com, right? And so are you more likely to get, you know, Greenberg.genealogy than GreenbergGenealogy.com? Or if it's not available, you know, finding a better string in, as you say, .club or .genealogy, right? So I think that parsing into various markets is part of how we're going to look at that. But we'll also look at them as a whole, and as sort of verticals, are they able to semantically compete with .com? And does that have an impact on pricing of .com, pricing in the aftermarket of .com, et cetera? So those are some of the things that we'll be looking at. And it's not necessarily going to be easy, but that's what we're trying to do, Alan, and to see if competition was created. You know, that said, there's certainly a part of the ICANN community that believes that there doesn't need to be competition to justify new GTLDs. The let a thousand flowers bloom notion suggests that if we can sufficiently mitigate the downstream consequences of expanding the number of GTLDs, that we ought to just allow people to create them at will, and that and performing an economic analysis on whether or not competition or choice has been created doesn't need to be the justification. I think it gets used as a justification if we aren't sufficiently mitigating the downside consequences for IP holders and others, consumer confusion, increased phishing attacks, et cetera, that you end up having to come up with a balance. But all things being equal, I think many would suggest that we don't need a justification to expand the program.
Okay, thank you. As a very quick follow-on, I presume, and I don't need an answer of what you're finding, but I presume you're also looking at whether this is real competition or essentially coercion to have to spend more money to make sure all of the possibilities are covered in whatever minimal field you're in.
Yes, Alan, that's a very good question. In fact, Kali, your representative of the group, has raised the specter of this kind of, inadvertent, coercion of which you speak. So the obvious one is related to intellectual property, that I've got to go out and buy all kinds of TLDs in order to protect my brand. But the other possibility, and Kali has raised this, is have we created a scenario in which to fully cover your business, you have to get .club.paris and .genealogy, if that were one, all together in order to sort of cover the different places people might look for your business. And so that's
exactly
an interesting question that we're trying to explore as well.
Yeah, which is exactly one of the reasons we have two for my genealogy group.
There you go. Thanks for your question, Carl.
This is Carlton. I just want to add, endorse all that Jonathan has said, because this competition issue has certainly been taking up a lot of your time with us. Carly, as you know, as Jonathan mentioned, has been closely watching that sub-team, because he's very much interested in those competition issues, especially the IP1 brand protection kind of moves, which he's thinking about. Well, he certainly has a view that they shouldn't be classified as competition. Those kinds of moves should not be classified, although we have a group that says non-price competition. He doesn't think that is so much competition. So, but that's a position that he's been actually evolving with him. We are taking a lot of look at that. But the market stratification, the market segmentation attempts that we are making is what we think will probably help us to glean some answers that we can use in answering the question whether or not competition has emerged in the domain name space from these new GTLDs. I think right now, the more information we have, the more inputs we have from community as to what, for example, you gave your genealogy example. It will certainly help to frame our minds as we look at how we could segment the market to see what's happening.
It appears Carlos is having trouble with his mic. Carlos, this is Terry. If you just send me a private chat, we're also happy to dial out to you on the telephone.
He seems to have withdrawn his question, so he wanted to respond to Alan's question, I think.
And Tijani, if you're speaking, I do believe you're muted at this time. And Tijani, are you able to hear us?
So I don't see the...
There. You're back. Thank you, Tijani. You're back.
Okay, thank you very much. So waiting for the fixing the problem of Carlos Mike Is there any other question to our speakers?
And it does appear we have one question in our chat, and I'll read it for him from Bashabong. We found weak demand from Africa as what to do to have more applications and also to avoid falling on the current problem of dowry Africa.
Thank you for your question. And there is a separate sub-team that is looking into the application and evaluation process, specifically to see if there were either disincentives or a lack of incentives for applicants from Africa, Latin America, and Asia that might otherwise have applied. So one of the things that we're trying to determine is the cause of that lack of application. The easy answer is that it's about money.
Jonathan, this
sorry.
Is Terry.
Yes.
I apologize for interrupting you during the answer, but it appears our interpreters have again disconnected at this time. There appears to be some technical issues with their connection. If we could just give them a moment to rejoin.
Sure.
As the person asking the question is on the French channel as well.
Jonathan.
This is Terry. Our interpreters are back at this time. So thank you so much for your patience on this. Jonathan, if you could please continue.
Sure. I was trying to put something in the chat in case they didn't come back. But the idea here is that we are trying to explore the reasons for the lack of applications from the developing world generally, including Africa. And so as part of that, we will be trying to reach out to the same kinds of entities, whether they're brand owners or communities or registrars, et cetera, that did apply from the developed world or the global north, and try to find those people and ask them why they didn't apply. And the answer may be about money. It may be lack of awareness about the program. It may be a lack of confidence in the market for new GPLDs in Africa. So once we have a better idea about what it is that prevented those applications from taking place, we'll be able to make recommendations to the boards to better facilitate applications from the developing world in the future.
Jonathan, and the same person asked why the new GTLD application are stopped for some years. If you want to answer this question.
Sure. So one of the interesting things that happened was that the new GTLD program, I think in an attempt to keep it from being overwhelming, was designed as a round that had a limitation on the time. And ironically, I think that led to more applications than we would have gotten had we just had open applications. So one of the things that will be considered both by the CCP review team and the PDT on subsequent procedures is whether or not a new application should be handled via a round in the future, or if there should be just an easy way to apply on an ongoing basis the way that there is for registrars today. So that's why there's a break now, is because there was planned to be, so that there'd be time for these reviews. But in the future, those applications may be ongoing.
Thank you. And he also spoke about DotAfrica. Do you have anything to say about it?
feel like I should only speak about .Africa with my attorney present. But, so I don't have anything specific to address on that. I don't know if Carlton or Carlos would like to speak to that.
Okay, thank you. I think that Carlos has fixed the Adobe Connect problem.
Hello, can you hear me now?
Yes, very good.
Thank you. Sorry, I just want to comment to Alan Greenberg's question or comment that we spent a lot of time in the definition of competition, consumer choice, and consumer trust, and it's worthwhile reading that in the charter of the review team. So that gives you a first step into the explanation. And the second comment I wanted to make to Alan is that competition normally is seen from the point of view of the consumer, and the consumers here are either applicants or users of the Internet. And as already mentioned, the way to measure competition is either because there are barriers to entry that you cannot get a new TLD, and we discussed that earlier in the call. That's all related to the applicant's guidebook. But the test is very easy. If there is more competition, prices should be lower. And the moment you see that new GTLDs are given for free while others are being sold for very high sums, amounts of money, at least we see a lot of activity. If that's good competition, we will have to find out. But in any case, as Jonathan said, we think a lot every day about that. And please refer to the charter where I think very clear definitions have been made about competition, choice, and trust. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Carlos. We have 4 minutes left. So Thierry, can you please proceed to the evaluation questions?
Certainly, thank you. At this time, we'll now conduct our evaluation survey questions. There are a total of 10 questions. The first question, the captioning feature of the Adobe Connect Room is part of a pilot. Please choose the suitable term. Moving on to question number 2. Please self-identify all categories that describe who you are. Survey question 3. What benefits did you get from accessing the captioning stream? Continuing from that question, if you would like to describe what benefits you were able to get from accessing the captioning screen.
Okay, this is the last question.
And Tijani, since it's a webinar, there's actually several more questions. There were a total of 10.
Okay, because I would like them to finish this addition after the last question. So because we have one hand raised now, and I would like to give her the floor. So please go ahead.
Go ahead with the person who has their hand raised, and I'll give folks a few more moments to free form type into this section then. And we can continue
okay,
after the question.
Okay, thank you very much. Thank you. Renata, please go ahead. Renata? Okay. So So continue, Thierry. Renata, I have lowered her hand. Go ahead.
Thank you.
Thierry?
Thank you. Survey question number 4. Where else do you think captioning should be required? Question 5. How do you rank today's session in terms of quality of information? Question 6. How was the presenter's delivery? All the presenters' delivery. Apologies. Question 7. Do you plan on using any of the information directly with your at-large structures? If yes, please explain. And finally, any further comments or recommendations about the content of the session? I will leave the evaluation question up, and please feel free to take your time to fill in the survey on this question. Tijani, I'll hand it back over to you for any closing.
Thank you very much, Thierry. So you may continue to answer this question, even if it is not now. You can send an email to the staff. It is better to do it on the Adobe Connect, but if you don't manage, you can do it through the email to the staff. Thank you all. Thank you very much. I'd like to thank all our speakers, Margie, Carlton, and especially Jonathan, who is the chair of the review team. And I would like to also thank the interpreters and all our staff. Thank you very much, and see you in the next webinar. Bye-bye.
Thanks, everybody. Bye.
Bye-bye.
Thank you. Once again, the meeting has been adjourned. Thank you very much for joining. Please remember to disconnect all remaining lines. And have a wonderful rest of your day.
There are only 1 people in this conference. This call will be disconnected unless you press 88 now. This conference has exceeded the time limit for a single participant call. You will now be disconnected. Goodbye.